Do you dream of wearing a hoodie or t-shirt bearing the intricate and mysterious design of a Han Dynasty bronze mirror? Or featuring one of our seasonal logos like the Dogu or Kofun Tomb? Make that dream come true at the podcast's official merch store, found at ahistoryofjapan.threadless.com. Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 5, Episode 16, A Disturbance in Kanto. Taira Masakado was a violent, maniacal rebel who sought to conquer Honshu by force and make himself the emperor. Taira Masakado was a misunderstood orphan whose uncles sought to cheat him out of the property left to him by his late father. Taira Masakado plotted with the pirate Fujiwara Sumitomo to overthrow the government. Taira Masakado never met Sumitomo, nor did he seek anything resembling absolute sovereign power. In this episode, we will discuss the rise and fall of the warrior Taira Masakado. Over the years, his story has been subject to exaggeration, wholly fabricated details, and inventive explanations of his motives. Thus, to guide us through the fog, I will be relying heavily on the excellent book The First Samurai, in which historian Dr. Carl Friday attempts to reconstruct a more reliable account of what happened in the Kanto during the decade of the 930s. I highly recommend this book to anyone who wants a more detailed account about the life and times of Masakado. I found it clarifying and highly illuminating. Taira Masakado was most likely born sometime in the early 900s, which would have been near the beginning of Emperor Daigo's reign. He lived in the eastern part of the Kanto region, specifically Shimosa province. In his late teens, he traveled to the capital where he managed to attain the patronage of Fujiwara Tadahira, who was still a very powerful kuge in spite of Daigo Tenno's attempts to curtail his power. This was a huge achievement for the young Masakado, who reportedly desired a position as an officer of the Imperial Guard. It is a little surprising that in spite of his powerful patron, Masakado was unable to obtain any higher government appointment. It could be that his career was a victim of Emperor Daigo's efforts to limit the power of the Fujiwara, or that he had some kind of personal shortcoming like a quick temper or bad manners. Whatever the case, he returned to his home in Shimosa around 931, after the elevation of Emperor Suzaku. Masakado's uncle, Taira Yoshikane, was not happy that his nephew had returned to the Kanto, unsuccessful in his quest for higher office. Yoshikane had promised his daughter as Masakado's wife, but he appears to have rescinded this arranged marriage when Masakado returned, likely in light of the young man's poor fortunes. The girl, meanwhile, fled from her father's house and took up residence with her cousin, regardless of the old man's wishes. This was not only a betrayal of her father's wishes, but of popular custom. In Japanese marriages during these times, the wife continued living with her own family, and the husband would either visit her or take up residence with his in-laws. For the woman to leave her parents' household and live with her husband was almost unheard of. Yoshikane was not prepared to act against Masakado yet, but this was likely the beginning of a long-term enmity between Masakado and his uncles, who each gradually came to dislike him for different reasons. His next enemy, however, would not be from the Taira clan, but from the Minamoto. Masakado's grandfather was Minamoto Mamoru, one of the most powerful chieftains in Hitachi province, which was just north of Masakado's own Shimosa. Minamoto Mamoru had been engaged in a long-term boundary dispute with a samurai named Taira Maki. One account indicates that Maki pleaded with Masakado to convince Mamoru to settle the matter without further violence. We can't be certain, but this may have been why Masakado was traveling through Nomoto village with an armed escort in early 935 when he was ambushed by three of Mamoru's sons. Ambushes and horse archery had by this point become the primary means of samurai warfare. Rather than seeming underhanded or dishonorable, the warriors of early Heian Japan considered it a duty to always be on guard against such incursions. The sons of Mamoru and their compatriots rode their horses out of their hiding places and immediately began loosing arrows at Masakado's smaller warband. Accounts indicate, however, that the attackers were riding into a headwind, which put them at a stark disadvantage in what was essentially an archery duel. Masakado and his men reacted quickly and, to borrow from the Roman writer Vegetius, repaid the ambush's intended mischief with interest. All three sons of Mamoru were killed in the ensuing battle, along with many of their allies. The survivors fled, and Masakado's troops responded in the typical fashion of the Heian period samurai. They plundered and burned the village of Nomoto. Furious at this attempt on his life, Masakado raised additional troops from his home base. This meant more armored mounted samurai, but the punitive force would have also included the commoners under his patronage, whose fortunes rose and fell along with his. They would be more lightly armed and less reliable in battle, but the swell of numbers would make smaller opposing forces less likely to engage them. It would also make them more effective at their intended mission, raiding and pillaging as many Mamoru allied villages in southern Hitachi as possible. While it is easy to condemn Masakado for this collateral retaliation against unarmed commoners who likely bore him no ill will, this sort of response was common for the time and place. The warriors of the Kanto settled their problems with one another by attacking their enemies' sources of food and wealth, and the peasants who worked the land were often tragically caught in the middle of these violent squabbles. The imperial court may have disapproved of such brutish methods of domination and feuding, but the government was not, as a rule, disturbed by these actions. Their primary concern was ensuring that the provinces paid their fair share of taxes, which by this point were in the hands of tax-farming nobility, who often hired samurai to perform plunder not altogether very different from Masakado's punitive expedition in southern Hitachi. The deaths of Minamoto Mamoru's sons was an outrage, which inspired retaliation among Masakado's relatives, who were also intertwined with Mamoru. His uncle Taira Yoshimasa, who was Mamoru's son-in-law, raised a warband of his own and swore he would hunt down and destroy his nephew. This put Masakado in a difficult position for a few reasons. Firstly, while his pillaging of southern Hitachi was seen in the eyes of local authorities as understandable redress for the attempted ambush, attacking Yoshimasa's lands in a preemptive raid would have likely resulted in Masakado becoming labeled a bandit and an enemy of the state. Returning to his homelands held a much worse danger, because the conscripts in his warband would return to their homes, and Yoshimasa would be justified in pillaging Masakado's lands as redress for the deaths of his brothers-in-law. Thus began an 8-month game of cat and mouse, where Masakado led his warband all over Hitachi province as his uncle Yoshimasa struggled to keep pace with his own army. Masakado fainted, retreated, and otherwise bamboozled Yoshimasa, staying one step ahead and never directly engaging his army. This kept his uncle preoccupied and, more importantly, far away from the farms under Masakado's protection. When it became clear that his uncle was not going to relent, Masakado offered battle by encamping his warband in a village in eastern Hitachi and waiting for Yoshimasa to attack. Taira Yoshimasa's forces charged, but were swiftly beaten by Masakado's fighters, who reportedly managed to inflict over 60 casualties upon their enemies. With his uncle soundly defeated, Masakado's warband returned to Shimosa. Yoshimasa had survived the encounter, however, and his defeat only strengthened his determination to see his nephew destroyed by any means necessary. Yoshimasa began recruiting allies to help in his struggle against Masakado, turning first to his brother Yoshikane. While it is tempting to imagine Yoshikane seething for years after his daughter had left his household to be married to Masakado against his wishes, Dr. Carl Friday posits that the decision to move against his nephew was likely more political in nature than personal. Yoshikane himself was serving as assistant governor of Kazusa Province, which was south of Masakado's home province of Shimosa, and both Taira Yoshimasa and Minamoto Mamoru held offices in provincial governments and wielded significant political influence throughout the Kanto. By comparison, Masakado was a minor player at best, a man who had somehow failed to obtain government office in spite of the sponsorship of the regent himself. In 936, Yoshikane assembled his warband in Kazusa and marched into Shimosa to link up with Yoshimasa's forces in Hitachi. When officials from the provincial governments tried to stop this armed march, Yoshikane claimed he was merely traveling to visit his in-laws. Once in Shimosa, his troops cut a wild path through forest and over mountains, avoiding the official roads and any potential further provincial interference. When he arrived in Hitachi Province, Yoshikane met with his brother Yoshimasa, as well as their nephew Taira Sadamori. A cousin of Masakado, Sadamori may have initially recommended resolving this conflict peacefully, although accounts of his involvement differ. He had been serving in Heian-kyo as secretary of the Left Bureau of Stables, but he abandoned his post in order to help secure his family's holdings and deal with the Masakado problem. The account that claims Sadamori was trying to broker peace also testifies that Yoshikane confronted his nephew over the matter and accused him of behaving unwarrior-like. A samurai's reputation was more important than keeping the general peace, and Masakado's warlike actions demanded a warlike response. Whatever the case, Sadamori joined the effort wholeheartedly. Yoshikane led his warband on a long march to Masakado's home. Rather than taking a direct route south, which would have been inconvenienced by the necessity of fording many large rivers, and also may have alerted Masakado to their presence, they marched in a long arc toward the northwest, then south, then finally stabbing eastward in a direct advance toward his home. Masakado, however, had been informed of Yoshikane's movements and assembled his own exhausted warband and set out immediately to intercept them. While the accounts of these events attest to armies with several thousand troops, these numbers are disputed by modern historians as impossible, given the logistical infrastructure needed to support armies of that size. It is more likely that both Masakado and his opponents had 200 or 300 men apiece, which would have been a large marching army in that time. Masakado caught up with Uncle Yoshikane and Cousin Sadamori at the capital of Shimotsuke Province. Yoshikane's warband was largely composed of mounted cavalry, i.e. actual samurai, while Masakado's army was at least half infantry. In a straight-up fight, Masakado would be at a clear disadvantage, but he seems to have used a clever stratagem here. Japanese foot archers in the early Heian period had almost no advantages whatsoever against their mounted counterparts. Very skilled bowmen had an effective range of around 20 meters, 65 feet, and generally could loose their missiles more frequently than mounted archers, but accurately hitting a target capable of the erratic movement of a horseman in open field is extremely difficult. Foot archers carried large pavi-style shields with them that would provide some protection, but in an open pitched battle, horsemen could maneuver to either side and nullify the protection of these large shields. Masakado came within sight of the provincial capital, appearing only with his cavalry on the outskirts of town. Yoshikane and Sadamori could not resist the chance to defeat him, now that he was apparently hosting inferior numbers and lacked infantry support. One of the practical reasons why ambushes were common in the Heian period was that it was difficult to chase down a mounted opponent. In this case, Masakado's uncle and cousin may have believed that their relative had blundered, and they weren't about to let this opportunity pass. Their cavalry charged Masakado's position en masse, but as they came close, Masakado's foot archers loosed a massive punishing volley into the crowded cavalry. The enemy horsemen were either too fixated on their target to notice the infantry deployed on their wings, or it could be that Masakado had his foot archers hide in the rice paddies or other local vegetative cover. More than 80 of Yoshikane's horsemen were killed in this cloud of arrows, and the remainder of his warband quickly broke and ran as Masakado's own cavalry countercharged. Yoshikane and many of his bodyguards managed to take shelter in the interior of the provincial headquarters, a government building which Masakado would be branded as a rebel if he attacked. He prudently returned to his home along with his warband to avoid any trouble from the Great Council of State, but a few months later he was summoned to the capital to answer for charges filed against him by Minamoto Mamoru. This was a critical moment for Masakado, who left at once for the capital to defend his good name. When he arrived, Mamoru was still on the road, so he took advantage and pleaded his innocence to the Imperial Guards and to the Daijo Daikan. This is not to say that he lied. This conflict thus far had only involved himself and his relatives and their respective warbands. He had not attacked any government buildings or officials, so the accusation that he was behaving as a rebel was baseless. The state seemed to agree, but the matter became moot 2 months later when Emperor Suzaku celebrated his coming-of-age ceremony and a general amnesty was declared as part of the festivities. In spring of 937, Masakado returned to his home in Shimosa Province. If he hoped that the matter between himself and his uncles had been resolved, however, he was sorely mistaken. He was informed that Yoshikane had assembled another large warband and was on the march, so he formed a scouting party to try and find them. Yoshikane's warband found them first, however, and enveloped them near Kogai Ford. The fighting was intense, but Masakado and most of his horsemen managed to escape. Yoshikane proceeded to raid Masakado's farmsteads and villages, burning and destroying in the same manner that Masakado had done to Minamoto Mamoru's holdings after the failed ambush at Nomoto Village 2 years before. Masakado assembled an army and took the fight to Yoshikane about 10 days later near the Horikoshi Ford of the Kinu River. The resulting battle was an absolutely crushing defeat for Masakado. No one wins them all, and no one gets lucky forever. He managed to escape with his life, and accounts indicate that part of the problem was that Masakado had suffered from an ailment in his legs. This may have been a symptom of a condition called beriberi, which is caused by thiamine deficiency, and was common throughout Japan in this period. Yoshikane continued to raid and burn Masakado's fields and villages, as Masakado himself opted to wait his uncle out, hiding in the hills with his family close at hand. Yoshikane hunted relentlessly for 10 days before deciding the effort was fruitless and disbanding his army to return to Kazusa Province in the south. When Masakado believed it was safe, he brought his family out of hiding to return home and begin rebuilding what his uncle had put to the torch. Masakado sent his wife and children ahead of him, and as they crossed a lake toward their home in Kamawa, Yoshikane's men, who had been informed of this development by a spy, captured Masakado's family and took them to Yoshikane's house in Kazusa. This is where we will leave Taira Masakado for this episode, with his wife and children captive, his homelands burnt and pillaged, and his enemies eager to strike the final blow. Next time, we will continue discussing his further adventures, his triumphs, and his mistakes. Until then, thank you for listening. Please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.